I'm Justin Boyd.
And I'm Brittany Pacheco, and we are the Watchers in the Basement.
Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. We are here today to discuss the relatively new book, MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios. If you are a watcher or a listener of our podcast, you know the last couple months I've been mentioning this book nonstop. So we had to do a special episode about some of the facets of this book. I don't want to give away the whole thing. I think that anyone who's interested in the MCU at all, or superhero movies, or just movies in general, if you're interested in how the movie business works, this is a must read. So like I said, not going to spoil all of it, but we're going to talk about some casting stuff that was revealed in the book that I wasn't aware of. Some of it I was, but most of it I wasn't. So we'll get to that. But first, Brittany, there was a breaking news story from the world of the MCU today. And this has been something that we've been kind of, kind of waiting for, to hear what was going to happen with Jonathan Majors and his situation. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I had no idea that even this was going to be dropped, with the jury already beginning deliberations to discuss what was going to happen with Jonathan Majors and being accused of assault and domestic harassment against his former girlfriend. And the news dropped this afternoon while we were having lunch with, some other fellow watchers. And it was a little shocking. I say shocking just because of the footage that had most recently been released to the media, showing the events of that night, along with when the police were called to Jonathan Majors' home in New York and everything that transpired there. It didn't seem like it was in the former girlfriend's favor of what she alleged happened versus what we were seeing with the CCTV footage. It didn't match up. However, the jury did find Jonathan Majors guilty for two counts, but also acquitted him of the two other counts. So it's a little bit of a mixed answer, which I don't fully understand.
What we saw last week when that footage was released, to me, that's what we were talking about earlier today. I was like, it is kind of a, this is before the verdict was announced. I was like, it's kind of mixed. Like, I mean, it doesn't look great for either party, whether it's Jonathan Major or his ex-girlfriend. And that woman's name is Grace Jabari, who is also an actor. So I guess I wasn't surprised at how the verdicts came down, but it was like, this is something we've been talking about for, almost a year, it seems like, or, most of this year.
It happened earlier this year in February and March, I believe. Right. So, yeah, it's taken up a good majority of the year.
It's kind of been hanging over the head of the MCU, given, Jonathan Majors was cast to play He Who Remains / Kang, and Kang was the villain of the multiverse saga. And now, Marvel's dropped him. As you can see our ticker, I'm reading here from Variety. It says Marvel Studios has parted ways with Jonathan Majors, the actor cast to play Kang, the central antagonist in the multiverse saga of the MCU. After he was convicted December 18th today on two misdemeanor court counts of harassment and assault of Grace Jabari, his ex-girlfriend. It says a source close to the studio confirmed the decision to Variety. So, like you said before, he was found not guilty of one count of intentional assault in the third degree and one count of aggravated harassment in the second degree. So, obviously, it's a messy situation from all points all of parties. View. But from the perspective of entertainment wise, which is what we do here, talk about the MCU and superheroes and movies. He's out. Jonathan Majors, very talented actor, an actor who was on the rise, it was kind of a meteoric rise from,
it was,
the first time I ever saw him was on Lovecraft Country, which is an HBO show, which I did not watch, but I mean, I watch HBO shows. So I knew the show was on there, and, it seemed like overnight he was cast as Kang, and then he's, in Creed 3 as the villain. And then, he was going to play Dennis Rodman in a biopic about Dennis Rodman, which who knows if that's even going to happen anymore. Lots of stuff. He has other movies that are kind of in limbo given his situation. And, he was dropped by his agent. He was dropped by, other movie studios. And the last holdout was Marvel. And it's, we were wondering, would Marvel Studios, what would they do? And right after the news came out today, about an hour later, they dropped him. So what are your thoughts on that?
It's one of those things where I definitely could tell that was the direction that Marvel or Disney Marvel were headed towards, just because of other little things that were happening ahead of time. They let go of the writer from Quantumania, mm-hmm. heavily involved the character Kang and kind of developing that story. And that writer, I believe, was slated to write for Kang Dynasty, which would be the next big Avengers movie.
Jeff Loveness is the name of the writer. Yeah.
Right. And Disney did hire a new writer for the new Kang Dynasty movie. However, at the time, it was still named Avengers Kang Dynasty. But since the drop of Jonathan Majors from the studio because of the guilty verdict, right now it's more or less being slated as Avengers 5. So right. If they come up with a new title, if they come up with a new villain, I'm sure that's all going to be incorporated into that movie. Mm-hmm. But we've talked about it here a lot. I'm not 100% surprised that this was the move with not only the trial, not only with Disney, but the fact that I was actually a little bit more appreciative that Disney was at least waiting for the verdict mm-hmm. before they made any final decisions. However, they already were kind of moving in the direction of, we're going to drop Jonathan Majors and pivot to another actor, pivot to another villain within the MCU so that we can keep this multiverse going. And by the sounds of it, a lot of rumors have surrounded the villain from Fantastic Four, which would be Dr. Doom. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if that actually transpires or not. So I will say once again, I've said it before, I very much enjoyed watching Jonathan Majors play Kang. This villain, I think, was so interesting to me. I think his performance was so captivating. Like, you believed every single word that he said as Kang, or He Who Remains, and you just felt it in your bones, like, oh, this man means business. And maybe that kind of really played out in real life. Listen, we weren't there. We've seen the footage, of course, that was released from, you know, CCTV cameras. We're not in these people's lives. We're only being given bits and pieces of their lives. And those involved obviously know the truth or interpret the truth the way that they see fit. It's really unfortunate, just because I feel that he is such a talent and would have a lot to offer to Marvel. However, you do the bad thing. You're tried by a jury of your peers. You are, you know, given a verdict. And you have to deal with those consequences, you know, actions, choices, they all have consequences, whether good or bad. And hopefully with this is something that he'll learn from, grow from. Don't know what's going to happen with his career. Just as you said, it was very meteoric with, just his takeoff. The reputation is tarnished, that's for sure, especially with Disney and Marvel being what it is. Because we're going to learn a lot about the reign of the MCU today. But this is really interesting timing of us wanting to delve into this book that you read to talk about the casting what ifs. And then, like, the biggest casting, or one of the biggest castings that Marvel ever made, is no longer associated with the studio. So it's just really damnedest of timing.
I mean, it's not the biggest decision in the MCU. I think that was probably casting Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. We'll get to mm-hmm. that in a little bit, but yeah. it is kind of a pivotal point for the MCU. You know, obviously the movies are not as popular as they were in previous years.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the Marvels did not do very well. Quantumania, which was the movie that Jonathan Majors Kang was in, also did not do very well, you know, compared to Marvel standards.
Yeah.
So, it's really, we're at an interesting point in the MCU where, and you know, you mentioned before, the movie kind of reportedly, internally, people are referring to it as Avengers 5 instead mm-hmm. of the Kang Dynasty. However, right. it's still officially listed as the Kang Dynasty on Marvel's website. It has a release date of May 1st, 2026. I don't think that either is going to be true. The title is going to change. I do think that obviously the release date will change. Here's the thing. Would you recast the character? There are definitely actors out there who could play this character, and the character, you know, just the character itself of Kang if you're going to recast a character, Kang is kind of the perfect one because he has all these variants. So you could really just select any one and just say, oh, this is a variant of Kang, and just kind of be on your way. I mean, really, with movies, you can kind of do that with anything, right? Sure. Like you can recast. It's all make-believe stuff. So you can, you know, recasting happens quite often. But so what do you think? Would you recast?
I think this would actually be probably the one and only time opportunity presents itself to recast, just because we already know that we're in the multiverse. We already know that there's variants. We already know that He Who Remains or Kang has multiple variants. And while we were kind of introduced to that at the end of Quantumania, all the variants looked like Kang. Okay. But we also know that that doesn't necessarily have to be. So if you want to pivot and cast a completely different actor to be Kang, again, this is the one and only opportunity to do so. And I think if I'm not mistaken, this would actually be the first recasting in the MCU. If I'm forgetting something,
I'll think about, Don Cheadle became.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Rhodey. Yeah. You're right. Okay. See, there we go.
That was a big one. That was a very early
one. That was a pretty big one because when you have what's his name? Howard. Howard the Stark? First Rhodey. No. The actor that played the first Rhodey. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He was already.
Yeah. Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard. Thank you. Yeah. He was already a big name, that's a big deal. But then he gets replaced by Don Cheadle, who I think is just a wonderful replacement, of course. So it'd be really interesting to see who could potentially be recast as Kang. It's funny how we're on this theme of recasting, Justin. Real quick, before I offer who I think could be the next Kang, I want to get here into the chat. We've got Yesenia here. Thank you so much for joining us. In regards to Jonathan Majors, she says he's a good actor. I hope he gets his personal life together. I agree. And Desmonet, girl, thank you so much for being here. We love you. She says, hey guys, well said regarding Jonathan Majors. So yeah, you know, there's a lot going on in the world of the MCU, Kang, Jonathan Majors. But here's what I have to offer with regards to who could be cast as the next Kang.
Yep.
Don't come at me, y'all. Don't come at me. Listen, if you're watching here on YouTube, what I'm showing you all is from Twitter. It's Jonathan Majors gets fired. Yep. Hear me out. And pictured here in the Kang outfit in his throne is none other than RDJ from Tropic Thunder. It's going to be very controversial. Yes, I know, y'all.
That's not going to happen. It's funny, but that's not going to happen.
It's just funny to me. I shared it with you maybe 10 minutes before we jumped on this pod. And it's like, it's just so funny to me. Listen, this is one way to bring back RDJ. Okay. Because I still feel you bring him back at any capacity as Iron Man, it destroys the moment, the ultimate sacrifice of Endgame. But you bring him back as Kang.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I think anything is possible.
I think so too.
The story's good. You can make anything work. I don't think this is gonna work. This is obviously a joke, but there's some speculation online. There are people throwing out names like John David Washington, maybe as Kang, or John Boyega from the Star Wars movies.
John Boyega. Okay, I can get behind it. Desmonet says I can dig it with RDJ as Kang.
But honestly, I think they're gonna go the other direction. They're gonna pivot. I think that the Kang name conjures up Jonathan Majors, right? People are going to think Jonathan Majors whenever they hear Kang, even if it's recast.
For sure.
And quite honestly, you know, Jonathan Majors played the character. He was in the Loki season finale where he, Loki season one finale where he played He Who Remains for the first time. Then he appeared in Quantumania. Then he appeared in, of course, in season two of Loki as Victor Timely and also He Who Remains. And, you know, we love Loki on this podcast, and I think Loki season two is the best season of MCU television thus far. But you know, people weren't as big on Quantumania, and it was almost like the way they ended season two of a Loki, you know, Kang was kind of pushed aside. So it was almost kind of a perfect way to pivot and go to another villain. You know, be it Dr. Doom or whomever they decide to go to. So, you know, and also because Quantumania didn't work as well as they hoped it would. So I think that that's very possible. I think that, like I said, I think the movie will not be called The Kang Dynasty. It'll be Secret Wars Part One or some other Avengers, you know, related title to go with the other Secret Wars movie that's, or to go with the Secret Wars movie that we know is coming out later on.
Yeah,
it's just, like I said, it's a very interesting time for the MCU. And I think now we know that they're going to make it, you know, the decision's been made. So now it's just like, what's the movie going to be called? And then we can get going. Because, you know, Avengers movies, so far, four of them have been four of the biggest movies of all time. And
for sure,
I think they would definitely love to get that Avengers title back in the theater so that, because I think people will go see those movies.
Well, and I think now, given the events that has happened with Jonathan Majors, I think people might actually be curious as to how Marvel is going to pivot and how they're going to handle this villain, or if they're going to change villains altogether, they're going to do a recast of the villain. You see what I'm saying? So I think, you know, while there's been superhero fatigue for quite some time, I think this might actually kind of create some sort of energy where people are just like, okay, now I need to know what they're going to do. I need to know what's going to happen. So I don't know. It's a business, y'all. It's about the money. It's very unfortunate it's happened with Jonathan Majors, given how his career was beginning to take off and whatnot. And I agree with Yesenia here in the chat, said that nobody wants to touch that, meaning Kang, or being cast as Kang, with a 10-foot pole. Too controversial for press junket questions. And I agree with that. Yeah. And with regard to John Boyega, absolutely loved him in Star Wars. Unfortunately, said he would never want to work with Disney again after Star Wars backlash and scandal. I get it. I completely understand it. We're not fans of the sequels here on the Watchers in the Basement. At least Force Awakens was okay.
Yeah.
It was fine. It had potential, but the last two movies were utter trash. And I don't
hate The Last Jedi. I don't hate The Last Jedi. I think it's fine. I just think that
when Luke Skywalker says it wasn't good.
Well, you mean Mark Hamill, the actor.
Yeah. No, I know what I said. I know what I said.
Yeah, no, I know. But I mean, to me, the problem with that series was you had three movies and they didn't go together. You had a trilogy that wasn't in sync. And that's a mistake. Like that's an organizational mistake.
You also ended with the protagonist, claiming to be a Skywalker. It's like, shut up.
Yeah, the Rise of Skywalker, really bad movie. Trash. One of the worst movies I think I've ever seen. Trash. I'll never watch that movie.
We're not going to get on that tangent.
No, right now. We're moving on. Moving on. So from, you know, but we're sticking with the business because let's talk about how the MCU kind of came to be. And I have discovered this recently. I've been reading this book and, you know, I'm glad Yesenia joined us, is in the chat. And of course, Desmond, it's great to have her. Desmond was a part of our draft episode we did a few weeks back, the 2023 MCU movie draft. So please be sure to go vote for Desmond A or Brittany or myself or George or Frank or Amber, who we have. Brittany's posted that in the chat now. If you're watching us on YouTube, we'll also have the link in the description for YouTube watchers and for listeners on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. But please go check out the poll, vote for who you think won the draft. And we really appreciate it. We're going to announce the winner early January. When we come back, we'll be talking about who won the poll. And just a reminder, Desmond A won our draft last year, which was a character draft. So maybe she goes back to back. I don't know. We'll see.
We're coming for you, Desmond A. We're coming for you.
Right. So it's great to have Desmond A in the chat, but especially I'm really happy to have Yesenia in the chat because Yesenia pointed this out a few weeks ago. I've been talking about the book MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios, literally since I started reading it, which the book came out October 10th. And I downloaded it to my Kindle the first second I possibly could. And I've been talking about this book almost nonstop to everyone who will listen. So I decided to put together a pod. Yeah. For this, about the book. Now I don't want to spoil the entire book because there's so many interesting angles and nuggets about the MCU that I really think that everyone should read this book. It's a fun read. I flew right through it. I mean, it's obviously something I'm very interested in, so there's that. But I think that, like I said, if you enjoy these movies, if you enjoy superhero movies or just the movie business in general, you should check it out. There's a lot to glean from checking out this book. But what I want to talk about today is all the casting what ifs that happened throughout, you know, Marvel's history. And, you know, if you think about it, like, Marvel is so good at casting. They're so great at casting. And, you know, the kind of the their secret weapon is a lady named their casting director, Sarah Haley Finn. And I know you've probably seen her name because on every Marvel movie, she's listed as a casting director. And she's kind of the unsung hero of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because without her, we probably wouldn't have Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, which that's, you know, obviously the biggest decision in the franchise history that kickstarted the franchise. Without that movie, without that actor, I don't think this, you know, we're not talking about the MCU today, you know, unless we're looking back at a, you know, a failed franchise experiment. So that was a huge project. So let's get into some of the casting information that I kind of discovered in this book. Brittany, I've talked with this item with you a few times before, but it's still just shocking to say out loud. So this book, not only does it talk about casting decisions in the MCU, but it talks about casting decisions in just Marvel films in general. And, you know, the first big Marvel film in general was X-Men, came out in, I believe, 2000.
I love this topic.
Yeah. In 1999, directed by Bryan Singer. And, you know, they were casting this movie. And one of the most famous people in the world who ever lived, the King of Pop himself, Michael Jackson, lobbied to play Professor X.
Wild.
That is, when I read that, I had to read that sentence over and over, because I was just like, I could not picture Michael Jackson playing Professor X.
Nope.
Brittany, what are your thoughts on the King of Pop as Professor X?
It's wild. It's truly wild. Like, when you were talking about it with us, what was it, about a month ago or so, I literally could not believe it. And not that I don't believe you as a person. I didn't believe the whole idea that arguably the biggest celebrity that may have ever existed wanted to be Professor Charles Xavier so badly that, you know, he basically agreed to wear like a bald cap and, you know, the makeup, the, you know, whatever needed to be done. He wanted to be Professor X. And that to me is just crazy. And it wasn't until you pulled up, I think, the article from, was it Rolling Stone or Variety? One of these two big publishers, where it was like an article from 5 years ago that talked about this. And I'm like, that is absolutely wild to me. And of course, we can't really talk about this whole thing without making some jokes. And so it's kind of like the whole, you know, Billie Jean Grey, are you okay? Are you okay? You're so stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so funny. Yathinia here says sign of the times. Yeah, it's just unbelievable to me. And you know, I think it goes to show that every single person in the world has like their little nerd fathom, not fathom, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like, everyone has like something that they're really super into. And that, I guess, was very much MJ. And Desmond A is asking, didn't MJ want to play Peter Pan too? Given yep. that his place was called Neverland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he thought he was Peter Pan. I think he did.
Yeah, I think he did too.
Right.
Bless him. But yeah, that for you to start off with that bit of information, mm-hmm. with just starting off the book in general, I'm like, oh God, what more will there be when it comes down to like the big castings of Iron Man, Hulk, for God's sakes, Captain America? Because we've talked about this a lot before here on the pod that a lot of these major MCU characters that we know and love weren't really beloved in their comic days.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing about the MCU is they built this mega franchise on the backs of B to C level characters, because, you know, Spider-Man, who is the most popular character in all of comics, you know, bigger than Batman, bigger than Superman, bigger than Wonder Woman, Spider-Man, you know, they didn't own the rights to Spider-Man. Sony did. And their second biggest character, the Hulk, they didn't own the rights to the Hulk. And, you know, their biggest team up, or their biggest team, X-Men, of course, Wolverine's a major character also. You know, Fox, 20th Century Fox had the movie rights to that. So how the MCU was built, again, this is all detailed in the book. But you know, they built it on Iron Man and Captain America and Thor, and you know, these characters that were, you know, B level or C level characters. So it is amazing that how they you know, they didn't have their top characters. But that'd be like if DC built itself on Green Arrow or, you know, the Flash, or even the Flash is kind of a big, you know, name, you know, or
yeah,
you know, Green Lantern or Martian Manhunter. That'd be like, that's kind of what the MCU did with their characters. So
crazy.
I would be remiss if I, before we go any further, I want to mention the authors of the book are Joanna Robinson, Dave Gonzalez, and Gavin Edwards. Joanna Robinson, she is a writer and a podcaster for The Ringer. So definitely check her out. She has a great podcast on the House of R with Mallory Rubin. I know Brittany's a fan of Mallory Rubin.
Oh, Mallory.
Her
binge mode.
Binge mode day. So definitely check that podcast out.
Love.
Also, Dave Gonzalez also does a podcast on The Ringer with Joanna Robinson. It's called Trial by Content. Easy for me to say. Trial by Content. It's actually a very entertaining listen.
Very clever.
You have they pick different topics every week, and they three different hosts compete to see who wins, and they have a poll. And so it's a very creative podcast. And then Gavin Edwards.
No one dies.
Thankfully they don't. Yeah. But Gavin Edwards is a pretty noted author. He's written several books, including one about Samuel L. Jackson, where he uses Samuel L. Jackson's favorite word in the title. It's a mother. And I think, you know, the rest of that.
Fluffer.
So Fluffer. Yeah. Mother Fluffer. Yeah. Anyway, they did an incredible job with this book. A lot of research. This is like a 500 page book. I got it on my Kindle. I love reading books on my Kindle because it tells me, like, you know, the percentage I've read so far. Oh, you're 17% of the book, and you know, based on your reading speed, you'll be done reading in 5 hours and 26 minutes. I just love like the numbers while I'm reading. So anyway, but obviously you can pick this book up in all, you know, wherever books are sold. So I will stop plugging the book and I'll get back to the pod, but I really, really enjoyed the book. I even listened to the audiobook, which was like 16 hours, and I like flew through it like in a weekend. So, or 3 or 4 days. So anyway, cool. Very much enjoyed it. So back to the casting what ifs. Another one before the MCU was Wesley Snipes. So as you probably know, he starred in the Blade trilogy. However, while he was starring in Blade, he was attached to produce and star in Black Panther. And
really?
So back then, you know, they didn't operate in a connected universe. So Wesley Snipes was operating under the thoughts that not only was he going to play Blade, he was also going to play Black Panther, because those characters were never going to cross over. So he was like, it's cool if I play both these characters because they're never going to meet up. So I thought that was interesting, because nowadays I don't think you would see that happen, because, you know, obviously definitely interconnected not. Franchises are, you know, it's kind of the way to go, or let's see what's, you know, profitable business wise. So
funny enough, we are going to have a little bit of that conundrum when it comes down to Mahershala Ali, because he is slated to play Blade in the upcoming Blade movie, but he also had a role in, it wasn't then MCU, but it was still Marvel Studios when it was Luke Cage.
Marvel Television.
Okay. Marvel.
There is a difference. That is pointed out in the book too. Yeah. That's
okay. Cool. Well, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mahershala Ali has already been introduced into the Marvel family, if you will. He played more or less a villainous character in Luke Cage.
Right.
But then now he's cast as Blade. And I remember, because I actually never finished Luke Cage. I don't know. It wasn't really keeping my attention. No disrespect to anyone. It's just, I don't know. I enjoy Daredevil. But with Luke Cage and seeing him, and then knowing the information that he's eventually going to be Blade, I remember talking to Frank. I'm like, well, how is this going to work out when, you know, he's already got an established character in this show? Like, you're going to recast him, or you're going to cast him in a different role. And Frank, I think he alluded to something like it'll make sense. Like, it's going to make sense. I'm like, well, now I'm curious as to finish the show, but I just haven't yet. So. Yeah.
The only thing I can say is Luke Cage isn't canon to the MCU yet. It might be.
That would be, that
would
be.
But I mean, even like the Punisher, like John Bernthal is going to appear in the MCU, it sounds like. But as of right now, the Punisher from the Netflix series is not canon to the MCU just yet. So that's what I can say. And if they don't decide to use Luke Cage maybe they can avoid the whole Mahershala Ali playing two different characters.
Yeah, yeah, I think for sure. But to me, it was just really interesting that you have an actor who's being cast in two different roles within Marvel. So
So now getting to the MCU, Brittany, I have a trivia question for you. Who is the first actor who was cast to join the MCU?
Actual MCU.
Yeah, the first actor that signed on the dotted line to play an MCU character.
Oh, that's tough.
It's a surprising answer.
It's really good with trivia.
We've already mentioned this person.
Well, that narrowed it down.
Well, it's a person we mentioned early on, and I think give you an answer. The answer is Terrence Howard. He was the first actor.
That does make sense. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Obviously, he was the first roadie.
Was like the top billed actor for Iron Man. So
he made more money than Robert Downey Jr. did. So
yes. Robert Downey was a liability, I'm sure, because of reasons.
that's all detailed in the book as well. Mm-hmm. So let's move on. Let's talk about how the Avengers were assembled. So Iron Man, of course, it ended up being Robert Downey Jr., which, one of the greatest decisions in the history of movies was casting him. Christopher Nolan recently said the same thing. RDJ is in Oppenheimer, plays a pivotal role in the movie. And on the press tour, he mentioned that, Robert Downey Jr. being Iron Man was just, one of the biggest moves in the history of cinema. And it's hard to disagree with that.
It's very high praise given Christopher Nolan. Yeah.
However, he was not the only actor considered for the role. And let's get to that. Now, first off, before the MCU, Tom Cruise was rumored to play Tony Stark when the rights to the movie were owned by 20th Century Fox. However, when the movie was, when the movie rights reverted back to Marvel Studios, here's the list of actors who were considered for the role. And one of them is, a Britney favorite. Johnny Depp was considered.
Yeah.
What do you think about Johnny Depp as Tony Stark / Iron Man?
You know what? As much as I would love to see Johnny Depp in anything, I don't think it would have been a good fit.
No.
And it's no disrespect to Johnny. He's a very versatile actor, but I've seen him in both very serious and then like the goofy, sort of roles, right?
Yeah.
I feel Johnny is better slated for those kind of wacky type of roles. I think it's very fitting of his personality. When he's serious, he will be serious. When he's gets that opportunity to be goofy, I mean, he excels. I feel like with Tony Stark, yes, he's, billionaire, philanthropist, playboy, humanitarian, whatever you want to call it. But I don't see it. I don't see Johnny as Tony Stark or Iron Man. Mm-hmm. The delivery in a lot of RDJ's lines, I think, is very fitting just for RDJ. You know what I mean? But that's really interesting. I had no idea that JD was considered.
And the reasoning behind this, the reason why he didn't get the role, more so than, even the book didn't really specify whether he was interested. It was more so that I don't think Marvel Studios at the time had enough money to cast someone like Johnny Depp, who he was red hot at the time. He was doing the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, which were massive hits. Yeah. And so that was kind of a dream casting for them, which obviously didn't materialize, which thankfully didn't, because RDJ was the best choice. Mm-hmm. But there were other choices. So Jim Caviezel, who would play The Passion of the Christ. He he had, before being considered for Iron Man, he declined the role of Cyclops in X-Men. So that's interesting. I didn't know either one of those nuggets.
The first time I saw Jim Caviezel was actually in The Count of Monte Cristo. He played Edmond Dantès, and I think he was wonderful in that role as someone who was wronged and then he sought his revenge and got it. Which is funny because he played opposite to Guy Ritchie. I never remember Guy Pearce, who would play a villain in Iron Man 3.
So
I thought that was kind of interesting in itself. Desmond Ace in the chat says, I just pictured Captain Jack Sparrow as Tony Stark and it made me giggle. Girl, listen, It's a weird sort of.
Or Johnny picture. Depp and those cologne commercials that he has nowadays, where he's playing guitar. Have y'all seen those?
Yes. God, yes, I love him in those. Oh my God, yes. Now you get him to be Dante in Fast X or Fast 10. Yeah,
right.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, like I said, Johnny played some serious roles. I absolutely love him in the movie Finding Neverland, which is about the playwright who wrote Peter Pan. Funny how Neverland's a topic on this pod today, but that's a little bit more serious role, but he also had like his kind of fun, lovable moments. But I don't think it's the same energy as Tony Stark would demand. So, but Jim Caviezel. Okay. Interesting. Yeah,
interesting.
Also another no.
Yeah.
I can't see it.
So here's another interesting pick. Sam Rockwell, who would later be cast as Justin Hammer in Iron Man 2. He was considered you know what? Honestly, like the thing is at the time he wasn't a big enough name.
No.
But I think he kind of has more of the same energy that RDJ has.
He's kind of got that swag. I can see that.
I think obviously they made the right choice, but I think Sam Rockwell wouldn't have been a terrible choice. No. Now, the actor who, however, was the runner up or the close, closest to RDJ, if there's anybody close to him, was Timothy Oliphant, who at the time was on what's the show he was on? I mean, later he was on Justified, but he was on Deadwood, the HBO series. And there's a really funny clip on YouTube. You should definitely check this out if you're interested. Timothy Oliphant was on Conan O'Brien in like 2015 or 2016. And Conan O'Brien brings up in the interview, he's like, so you auditioned to play Iron Man. And Timothy Oliphant says, he's like, I screen tested the same day as this wonderful actor, Robert Downey Jr. He's like, and I'm still waiting to hear back. He's like, fingers crossed. And then, he's like, this could be a big moment for me. Superhero movies are huge. And then Conan's like, he's like, Robert Downey Jr. is all wrong. He's like, you've got this. So, yeah. So
yeah.
Very okay, funny clip.
Based on that. And then based on seeing him in The Office, of course, I was a late bloomer when it came down to The Office. He had a very small role in The Office, but he kind of exhibits that same Tony Stark, like, I'm just better than everyone and I'm smarter than, and I know it. I can see that. The only downside with Timothy, and I don't know the ages of these actors, if they're all close in age or not, he appears, at least to me, he appears to be older looking. Than RDJ.
I think they're about the same age.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now
he might be slightly younger, honestly.
I just, because in the things that I've seen him in, even from around that era, listen to me, from that time, you put him next to RDJ and it just looks like RDJ is much younger looking than him. So in terms of age and then how many movies there were, it's like, could Timothy be able to do all the things that, mm-hmm. not saying that RGJ couldn't or stunt doubles, that kind of thing. I don't know. Energy wise, personality wise, yes, I can see that. I can get behind that.
So I just looked at RGJ. Timothy Oliphant, 55 years old.
Okay.
Robert Downey Jr., 58 years old. So RGJ's older. Yeah.
He's older, but now RGJ, he's had a lifestyle change. He's not aging as well as he used to. But with Timothy Oliphant, I mean, he, to me, appears to look older, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, he was also in The Mandalorian. So
he was
in the Book of Boba Fett.
And I know your mom's a fan.
She's a big fan of Justified. Yeah, she loves Justified. Yeah, yeah. So
yeah.
So maybe mom would be.
Your mom's got good taste. Listen.
Yeah, maybe she'd be a big fan of the MCU if he were Iron Man. So
listen. Yeah.
But again, RDJ was the right choice. So
RDJ was the only choice.
Yeah. Well, not the only choice, but he was the main choice, the best choice.
I said what I said.
So moving on, let's go to Nick Fury. Now, Samuel L. Jackson was always the pick for the MCU, and mainly because in the comics, when they redid the characters in this Marvel Ultimate line of comics, the comic writer Mark Millar, he created the character. Like, he recreated Nick Fury in the image of Samuel L. Jackson. So, I mean, he was made to look like Samuel L. Jackson. So that it was almost like they had to cast Samuel L. Jackson. And Samuel L. Jackson is a comic book fan. he saw the version of Nick Fury back in the early 2000s, this new version of Nick Fury. And he was like, he contacted his agent. He's like, hey, or his lawyer. And he's like, do we need to sue somebody? Because like, this is me. And so they contacted Marvel. Marvel's like, no, please don't sue us. We're big fans of you. And we like what you represent. And like, you're obviously,
motherfucker.
Yeah, we enjoy, like, you know, you have a look that we want to portray with one of our characters. And he said, okay, cool. He's like, but if you ever make a movie, I get to play Nick Fury. And turns out that was the deal that ended up bringing Samuel L. Jackson to the MCU, which I think is kind of crazy. However, there was, before the MCU, there was another Nick Fury, which I did not know at all. Before the MCU, David Hasselhoff played Nick Fury in a 1998 TV movie. This movie, by the way, is on YouTube. I looked it up. I watched a little bit of it. A TV movie called Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. It aired on Fox in 1998. You can look it up on YouTube. Do that after the podcast. We'd appreciate that. I think that's funny. Of course, Hasselhoff would later appear in the MCU in Guardians Volume 2. But Hasselhoff has interviewed the book, and he's kind of salty, where he's like, you know, I had people at Marvel tell me that I was always going to be Nick Fury, and then you make the movies and I'm not Nick Fury. So, however, there are people in the book quoted that said, hey, like, Hasselhoff did a good job. It was a different version of Nick Fury. It was more of a, like, you know, tongue in cheek kind of jokey version of the character. Mm-hmm. I was blown away by that one, because I'm like, David Hasselhoff, the guy from Baywatch, you know, Knight Rider himself as Nick Fury. You kind of just have to see it to believe it. Brittany, what are your thoughts?
Don't hassle the Hoff, yo. Jeez, that based on my reaction, that's hilarious to me. Yeah. No, I can't see him ever being Nick Fury. I know something exists out there, but I'm trying to remember it. Did he have like a cameo where it looked like he had one eye patch in like one of the Austin Powers movies, or am I just?
Yeah, I think he did. I think you're right. Yeah.
I'm like, is that where that came from?
Crazy. Cause I didn't even think about it. You know,
oh my God.
Thing is, there is an actor who looks similar to him, and his name's Robert something. I can't think of his last name. Mm-hmm. He was very famous like in the 70s.
Okay.
He is in Austin Powers with an eye patch. You're right though. Hasselhoff might have been in Austin Powers. That's a very
no. But I think there was a camp, or there was some sort of one of these spoofy movies where Hasselhoff is wearing the eye patch, and it might be on the left one as well, left or right. Can't remember right now which side he wears it. But that is crazy to me to have Hasselhoff. Now that's not to say that he couldn't be serious or menacing when he needed to be. You know, there's certain roles that I feel that only certain people can play, and I think Nick Fury falls within that bracket, very much like RDJ. You know, it's written in the stars, it's written in stone.
Yeah,
there it is. There it is.
So far, they're 2-for-2 on our scorecard.
Oh yeah, for sure. So I mean, Samuel L. Jackson finally got to kind of say motherfuck. You know. That's a win. That's a win for all of us.
Well, I mean, it was kind of blocked out because he
I know.
You know,
he was
part of the snap. But
it's almost like, hey, this is MC, you know, Marvel talking to Samuel L. Jackson. Hey, by the way, we want you to be your character from Pulp Fiction, but just like tone it down a little. You know what I mean?
Yeah, give us the PG-13 version of that.
Yeah, exactly.
So moving on. We're going to the Hulk. Now, Edward Norton played the Hulk in the Incredible Hulk movie that came out in 2008.
Yep.
However, director Louis Leterrier, who directed Fast X, which is one of our best movies of the year. Right, Brittany?
I love Dante. Yeah. It's fantastic.
So Louis Leterrier, who also directed the Incredible Hulk, in the book, he mentions that his original choice to play the Hulk was... You want to guess, Brittany?
Oh, don't say Eric Bana, because he already was.
No, it wasn't Eric Bana.
Okay.
It was the actor who would later play the Hulk, Mark Ruffalo. So
really?
Louis Leterrier wanted to cast Ruffalo from the start. However, they went with the bigger star, Edward Norton. And Edward Norton, honestly, you should read the book just for the Edward Norton Hulk chapter, because Edward Norton was...
I mean, he was invested.
Yeah, he was too invested, and he clashed with Marvel Studios, and that's why he didn't return.
It's very similar to that of Henry Cavill with The Witcher. Like, you know, you're very invested in the story.
Similar,
and
that's
what that's kind of reminding me of. Wow, Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah,
again, Ruffalo written in the stars.
He was the original choice. So, and then after when Ruffalo took over for Norton, he actually called Norton to get his blessing. So he was like, he wanted to make sure they were cool. And Norton laughed it off and said, yeah, of course. He's like, in the future, everyone's going to play the Hulk. So anyway.
Well, he's also related to Pocahontas, so he's got to take everything with a grain of salt now. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I did not know that. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's got chill.
So the next character is Black Widow. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Scarlett Johansson was cast at 24 years old. She was cast to play.
She was only 24 at the time.
Yeah. When her first day of filming, she turned 24 and she, on the set of Iron Man 2 was where we got.
I feel so unaccomplished in life.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, you can't compare yourself to like these uber talented, like celebrity kind of people. You just got to, you know, keep yourself grounded. Keep doing what you're doing. You're doing fine. Don't worry about it. You're doing great.
No.
So,
no, we're not.
Now, Scarlett Johansson was the choice. However, the studio wanted Emily Blunt. Mm-hmm. Emily Blunt actually wanted to play Black Widow. However, she was contractually obligated to star in Gulliver's Travels with Jack Black, which was filming at the same time as Iron Man 2. So she could not be a part of it. What do you think about Emily Blunt as Black Widow?
Interesting choice. I don't know in levels of physicality, like how much she could do and or pretend to do. You know what I mean? Because I feel like with ScarJo, she had previously been in some roles where it meant that she had to be physical, like she had to do some fighting scenes or some sort of martial arts or something or another. But I like Emily Blunt. I mean, the very first thing I think I ever saw her in was The Devil Wears Prada. Yeah. And she was wonderful in that movie. So I think when she needs to be a badass, she can be a badass. But I feel like being Black Widow just kind of umps that level of badass. It would have been interesting. Let's check here in the chat that Yesenia said Emily would have been great. She loves her. And Desmond A agrees. She says, I like Emily Blunt. So, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that casting. I would hope that she'd be able to live up to that the physical part of being Black Widow, because she's an assassin. You know, she's a spy. She will do whatever it takes, right? Which actually might kind of tee you off to maybe the next character that you want to discuss.
So the next character we're talking about is Thor. However, Captain America and Thor were cast around the same time. So Captain America and Thor, there are a lot of options for these characters. So let's dive into it. Of course, Chris Hemsworth was cast as the God of Thunder. However, Marvel passed on him the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And
that I knew
at that time he was starring in a movie called Cabin in the Woods, which was directed by Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon.
Mm-hmm.
And they heavily pushed for Chris to pursue the role, and he ended up getting it. You know, persistence being the key. He kept auditioning, kept trying, and he finally got it. And of course, obviously you can't imagine anybody else playing Thor besides Chris Hemsworth. However, there are a lot of other people who auditioned for that role, including his brother, Liam Hemsworth, who Liam initially got further in the process than Chris did in the beginning, which is,
and I can't believe that. That's
I know. I can't believe it either. Obviously, and Liam's younger. Like I just don't see that as Thor. That's So Liam Hemsworth obviously was in the running. There were also many other actors, including Charlie Hunnam. Are you familiar with Charlie Hunnam?
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with him. He was in the show Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy.
He was also I think he was originally cast to be Christian Grey in 50 Shades of Grey.
Okay. Yeah.
Crazy to me. But anyway.
Yeah. And he's made some news this week in our kind of circle of stuff, because he is in a new Zack Snyder movie, Rebel Moon, which is like a Star Wars kind of adjacent movie. Now, it's not Star Wars, but it's Zack Snyder's version of Star Wars. Anyway, Charlie Hunnam is a character in that movie. And for a long time, he was rumored to, like, he would have played the DCEU version of Green Arrow. So, however, he was asked this week about that, and he shot that down. And he was like, I was not interested at all in playing. I didn't know who that character was. So kind of pouring some water on another superhero kind of casting. But so Charlie Hunnam was in the running for Thor. You also had Joel Kinnaman, who we later see in the Suicide Squad, or both Suicide Squad movies. And Alexander Skarsgård.
Is he like the Josh Duhamel kind of doppelganger?
He looks a little bit like Josh Duhamel.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
And
what was the next person you said? I'm sorry.
Alexander Skarsgård.
Oh, that's funny because his dad would be later cast in the MCU as well.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And then, of course, Tom Hiddleston, who.
Yep.
Tom Hiddleston, you can find his audition on YouTube for Thor. Mm-hmm. And they loved Tom Hiddleston so much. They didn't necessarily think he was Thor, but they're like, we've got to lock this guy into a deal. And so, of course, he became Loki, the brother of Thor, the villain of the first Avengers movie. So that was they were casting one character, but then they got two major characters in the same run.
Boy, what a chance that was. Good Lord. Thank goodness for the casting director and Kenneth Branagh for recognizing that Tom Hiddleston had something. Might not have been for Thor, but definitely the, mercurial villain that we know and love.
Yeah. And I should note that before the MCU, Sony was actually working on a Thor movie, and they were going to cast Daniel Craig. So...
Not James Bond.
And then, of course, we talked about this recently on one of our episodes of Loki, that Daniel Craig was going to play Thor's other brother, Balder the Brave. Remember that?
Yeah.
He was going to play Balder the Brave in Multiverse of Madness.
I don't know if he was a brother to Thor, but I think he was like an uncle or something. Either way, I think if Amber was here,
Amber would
know.
She
could give
us
the lore behind that for sure. Interesting.
Some interesting stuff. Yeah, a lot of stuff. Director Kenneth Branagh, he had one mandate as far as the casting. He said, "Don't let it be like Fabio." So that's all he cared about. Just find somebody who wasn't Fabio.
That's a good role.
Anyway,
I can support that for sure.
Moving on to Captain America, my favorite character in the MCU. This is a doozy. There are so many names.
So many.
I want to mention before the MCU, Jon Favreau, who of course would direct Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, who would also play Happy Hogan, Tony Stark's right-hand man. Before the MCU, Jon Favreau, who directed the movie Elf with Will Ferrell, he wanted to direct an Elf-type man-out-of-time comedy about Captain America. Brittany, what are your thoughts on imagine Elf, but Captain America?
I don't like Elf. I don't like that movie. There's something about Will Ferrell that
you don't
I
like
just,
Will Ferrell, yeah.
I don't care for him. Right. Absolutely did not care for him at all in The Office. The only movies that I think I have liked him in are Step Brothers and Talladega Nights. I think those are the only two. I could not get into Anchorman. Okay, maybe three movies. I watched the movie Bewitched, where he starred opposite of Nicole Kidman. I think their chemistry was actually quite cute. But otherwise, I don't like Will Ferrell. Yeah. I don't like Elf. I think it's an incredibly annoying movie. Sorry, Yesenia, I must be broken because like everyone in the world loves Elf and I'm just like, ew, go away.
It is one of the top Christmas movies because
I get it.
One of the streaming services this week, and I can't remember which one. I honestly can't remember which one, but like I looked at the top 10. I think it was Max. Elf was the number one movie on Max. And I was like, wow, that movie's from 2003 or 4 or something. So
it should be Die Hard. Anyway, that being said, no.
Yeah. No. Okay. Well, moving on to Captain America. Chris Evans, of course, was the pick. Great pick. However, Chris Evans declined to audition several times. He did not want to play this character. because he had played a Marvel character before. He'd played Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four movies, the 20th Century Fox Fantastic Four movies. And he didn't want to get typecast as a superhero movie actor. And I mean, honestly, like his
how quotes, did that work out for you, my friend?
Yeah. Of course, like, you know, I mean, Chris Evans is a great pick for that character. Honestly, I think he should go back to playing that character, because if you look at his career since then, it's been hit or miss, and it's mostly miss, in my opinion.
I think he was great in Knives Out.
He was great in Knives Out, yeah. I liked him in The Gray Man as the villain. He was like the over-the-top villain, almost kind of like Jason Momoa light from Fast X.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a great actor. But
yeah, no, he's great. I loved him in Knives Out because he's playing basically like the villain in that movie. But I don't know. That was cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, don't get me wrong. He's one of my favorite actors. I really liked him as Captain America. So Captain America was very tough. Let's talk about the other choices for the character. Ryan Phillippe, he was got pretty far in the casting process.
Reese Witherspoon's ex-husband. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. He was going to play Captain America. He was in the running.
You know, I think the only other movie I've really seen him in is the movie Crash from 2003, 2004. Yeah. So I don't know his career at all outside of that movie. And then the fact that he's Reese's ex-husband.
I think one of his biggest movies is Cruel Intentions back in late 90s, early 2000s. Late 90s. Yeah,
that's a big one. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yep. But when you see him, you don't necessarily, he doesn't really scream Captain America. So, anyway, moving on, Garrett Hedlund. Do you know who that actor is?
I don't actually. If I do, I don't know him by name.
Okay. He's probably the least known of these actors on this list, but he's been in a few things. And
anything that I would know?
You know, I don't know, honestly. He was in a Netflix movie a couple of years ago that had Ben Affleck and, I'm blanking out. Who played Moon Knight? What's the actor's name? Who played Moon Knight?
I just Googled him. Okay, yeah. So he was in Four Brothers. Okay, I've seen Four Brothers. He was in Tron Legacy. Okay. But other than that, no, I'm not too... okay, you know what? He was also in Troy. I think he played... what's his name? Brad Pitt's cousin in the movie Troy.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. He was Patrick List. Okay. I know who he is. Okay. Yeah. Not sure for Captain America. I could maybe Hawkeye, but,
I see that. You're right. Now I'm looking for sure.
I don't see it for Captain America. I can maybe see it for Hawkeye.
So the movie I was talking about with Garrett Hedlund, I just looked it up, was a movie called Triple Frontier. It's on Netflix. It stars Oscar Isaac, Ben Affleck, Charlie Hunnam, Pedro Pascal, and Garrett Hedlund.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty internet entertaining movie.
Internet.
Yeah. You tripped me up there. But so Garrett Hedlund was among the casting choices. Okay. Brittany, just, you know, hold your horses. But the next one is Jensen Ackles. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
That's why I wish we had Amber on this episode also to talk about this. So Jensen Ackles, of course, you know, one of your new favorite actors, of course, from Supernatural. But also he later would play in The Boys. He would play Soldier Boy, which is a Captain America knockoff. So how funny is that?
Where's my pop when I need it?
I mean, how funny is that?
Wow.
Yeah, so he ends up playing a Captain America knockoff years later, but he was considered for Captain America. How cool is that?
That's cool, but it's one of those roles that I don't think would have been very fitting.
Well,
I see him more as the
early too.
Well, yeah, Supernatural
would have gone away, because he would have been invested in Marvel. Yeah,
yeah, he would have. But you know what? That's okay. Give me all the Dean Winchester in the world. Give me all the Soldier Boy in the world. And you know what? Being the kind of anti Captain America, even though he pretty much thinks he's red, white, and blue. But, you know, not going to spoil the character at all for those of you who may be interested in seeing Jensen Ackles as Soldier Boy in The Boys.
Yeah.
But I think that's a lot more fitting for him, given what I've now seen of his character in Supernatural. So, yeah, Captain America. It would have been nice. I would have liked to have seen that ass in those leggings, but no, I think he's perfect for Soldier Boy as opposed to Captain America. Yeah, wow.
And he's getting, he's getting a lot of buzz right now for potentially being the DCU version of Batman when James Gunn cast that character. So we'll see. We'll see.
I've heard about that too.
And obviously he has ties to Batman playing the Red Hood and voicing Batman on animated movies. So we'll see about that. But yeah, so Jensen Ackles was considered for the role. And speaking of the boys, also a boys actor, Chase Crawford, who plays the Deep. He auditioned for Captain America. Can you imagine the Deep as
not
Captain
the
America?
Deep.
The Cap. Yeah.
No.
That's
absolutely
awesome.
Not.
Yeah. So Chase Crawford, he he was he must have been very young at that time.
Listen.
That's, you know, we're talking 2011-12 is when they were looking to cast this movie. Oh no, before that. But yeah, because Captain America came out in 2011. So we're talking about 2009-10. Yeah.
I was like 22 around that time. So that's wild to be Chase Crawford. Listen, I'll give it to these Texas boys for auditioning to be, you know, Captain America, because you know, we basically have our Texas flag, you know, just a small portion of the American flag in there. So there you go. But that's hilarious to me. Yep. Chase Crawford.
Yeah. Desmond A in the chat, she says that he was in Gossip Girl at that time. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Jerry Padalecki was in Gossip Girl at the same time. He was in one of those shows.
Yeah, because that was a WBCW show. Yeah. So. Yeah, all those actors kind of progressed into other shows. Yeah,
intertwined. Yeah, it's crazy.
It was kind of like a farm team for other stuff. You know, the CW became for themselves, and then obviously later for other things. So
yeah,
it's a great starting point for several actors.
Oh goodness, this is wild, Justin.
I know it's good stuff. That's why I wanted to have a big discussion about this,
because it's so funny. Really,
it's fun stuff.
I'm enjoying this.
The next actor is one that probably most of you have heard about this actor, because it's John Krasinski. Jim from The Office, during some off period during The Office, he auditioned to play Captain America. Now, of course, he would later enter the MCU as Reed Richards in Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness.
Unofficially.
Yeah, unofficially. Officially, he was in the movie.
Was he though?
Not for very long. Spaghetti-fied, spoiler alert, but he was in the movie. But John Krasinski tells a funny story in the book. And I've heard this I heard this actually before the book. He talks about how, you know, to be Captain America, you got to get pretty, you know, strong. You got to get beefed up. And he talked about how,
he did.
So he was talking about the time that when he was auditioning like, you know, around the same time Hemsworth was. And so he talked about how they were kind of in the same area. And he said he was like, John Krasinski was half dressed and a very pumped up Hemsworth walked by in full. Or costume, and John Krasinski at that moment realized that maybe he and his body weren't cut out for playing a superhero.
I think he said he was actually being fitted or into a costume that's Captain America related,
right?
Because I feel like I've heard him talk about this on Graham Norton, which I love Graham Norton show in general. But yeah, he talked about this. He saw Hemsworth walk by, and he's like, "Nope," and just like walked away.
I can't look like that guy, so I gotta get out. So.
But how wild would it have been if Emily Blunt, who was slated to be Black Widow, and then you have Captain America played by her husband, John Krasinski, which I don't know if they were married during that time of all this. I'm pretty sure they were. But and then given the movie of Captain America, the Winter Soldier, where Black Widow and Cap share like moments, like that would just have been so adorable because their real life husband and wife. I don't know. That would have been really sweet.
Yeah, no, it's an entertaining thing to think about.
So. It is. But you know what? I'm definitely not mad about the casting that was ultimately given to us, because I think they just played off each other very well.
Yeah. So another actor who auditioned for Captain America was Wyatt Russell. It was actually his first ever professional audition. Now, Wyatt Russell.
Serious?
Wyatt Russell, kind of like Jensen Ackles, but even more so, would later play a version of Captain America, you know, known as John Walker, aka U.S. Agent, in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So, and also, he was also very young. I mean, he was probably like maybe 20 years old or something.
Five.
Yeah.
He was like five.
Very young. But so Wyatt Russell auditioned to play Captain America. Then he actually did play Captain America years later, you know, for an episode or two. So.
And he actually is Kurt Russell's son.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he is. Yeah.
And Kurt Russell has a role in the MCU.
Yeah. And we will get to that in a little bit. Yeah. Because that's another casting. What if? Okay. But yeah, Wyatt Russell currently with his dad, Kurt Russell, are starring in a show on Apple about Godzilla. Mm. It's called Monarch.
Monarch.
Yeah, it's I'm watching it. It's kind of boring, but but both the Russells are great. They're great actors, so that it's fun to watch just for them.
Are they actually playing father and son in the show too?
They play the same character but different timelines, like a different So it's really it's really well done. Okay. It's really well, like, you know, obviously
that's smart. Wyatt Russell
plays the younger version, then Kurt plays the older version in current day. So
I have a question. I mean, I don't know how many more what ifs for Captain America there may be.
Two more.
Okay. Scott Eastwood.
You know, he was
That would be the only other person I could potentially see being Captain America.
He wasn't mentioned in the book, but the book doesn't mention every single person. So I've heard that maybe he was up for something like that. So I can see that.
I can see it. I feel like he's got that kind of
short though.
Yeah, but he's kind of got that all American, you know, look of
of
just being very clean cut, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know, maybe because of what we've seen him in Fast and Furious. I don't know. I could see him potentially being a Captain America or some sort of variant of Captain America.
Yeah, no,
just throwing it out there.
That's a good call. Good call.
Yeah.
So the next actor who auditioned to play Captain America, Sebastian Stan.
Oh, yes.
Of course. He didn't get Captain America, but he got to be in Captain America. A lot of
he got to be his best friend.
Yeah, he would be cast as Bucky Barnes, aka the Winter Soldier. So much like Tom Hiddleston, they're like, "Hey, Sebastian Stan's awesome. He's not going to be our Captain America, but he's going to be in the MCU." And they found a spot for him very quickly. That's
fantastic.
So that's pretty cool.
Love it.
The final one mentioned in the book was Chris Pratt. He auditioned.
Oh God, no!
Captain America.
No.
Brittany, you laugh, but like I feel like he could have been cast. I think obviously he is much better as Star Lord, but I feel like it's, you know, when he got in shape, I think that he could have been a Captain America.
Another Chris that could have sufficed would have been Chris Pine.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah.
Why not? Just get all the Chris's.
I mean, Chris Pine is you know, obviously he was in DC with he played Steve Trevor in the Wonder Woman films, and of course
also in Star Trek.
He was also the voice of a Spider-Man in Into the Spider-Verse. So,
just saying, he could have been another potential.
I bet if you look at the timeline, he was doing Captain Kirk work at that time.
I'm sure he was.
So probably wasn't available to even audition. For that character.
It's just like the Infinity Stones. Let's just collect all the Chris's. Okay.
There you go.
They're all virtually the same person.
So speaking of Chris Pratt, let's transition to the Guardians of the Galaxy, because this stuff is pretty wild. So the first character, of course, is Star-Lord, who Chris Pratt became the character. However, when James Gunn first saw Chris Pratt, he said, quote, "Chris Pratt was all wrong for the part." However, the woman I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, Sarah Haley Finn, she convinced Gunn James to let Gunn. Pratt. I'm sorry.
Oh, James Gunn. Yeah.
Yeah. She convinced James Gunn to let Pratt audition in person. And within seconds, reportedly, Gunn decided that Pratt had the part. So whatever Chris Pratt did in person, it won over James Gunn real fast. And so he became Star-Lord. So
you know what I bet he did? He probably did the scene where they're kind of like the lineup and he's like has his hand and he's kind of like he's cranking the what do you call it? Like the
middle finger. Yeah.
Middle finger. And it's just slowly going up. And that's probably what he did to James Gunn. He's like, that's
maybe
the guy.
So
I think
I think he did do the headphone scene where he's dancing.
Oh, jeez.
You know, at the beginning of Guardians 1. So, So,
hey, what's
today? Yeah. Which we also saw in Avengers Endgame. So
it's like, so James Gunn was probably like, so he's an idiot.
Yeah.
Casting director. Yeah. There we
chosen.
Go.
Yeah.
Chosen.
Okay. So I'm now this to me, this is the wildest casting what if.
Okay.
And Unfortunately, George couldn't be a part of the episode, but I did tell George this today because I didn't want to spoil this to anybody, any of the watchers before, because I want to get your general, you know, your authentic genuine reaction. Yeah, thank you for the assist. So the next casting was Drax. So of course Dave Bautista got the character. Dave Bautista, former WWE wrestler, perfect casting. Like,
don't say the
physicality.
Rock.
No, not the Rock.
Don't say the Rock. Okay.
No, but like, and I want everyone to listen to this one. This one blew me away whenever I read this in the book. So the person who auditioned for Drax first was Chadwick Boseman. Chadwick Boseman, who of course would be cast as Black Panther. He was going to be, or he wanted to be Drax. And while he did,
you're shitting me.
No, I was blown. I was like, this is unbelievable. Because like,
what?
Like body type wise of the character, even from the comics, you know, like, Drax is almost like a Hulk, like, I mean, a Hulk light, but a massive figure. So Chadwick Boseman auditioned. They loved Chadwick Boseman, but they're like, no, you're not right for this part, but we think he might be good for Black Panther. And so that's how he became Black Panther. He nailed the audition, but not for Drax. So I thought that was, to me, that's the craziest one. Of all the ones we've talked about, all the ones I'm going to talk about, that's the craziest one.
That is incredible. Yeah. Whoa.
I can't even see it. Like, as Chadwick Boseman as, because I mean, he was never like,
no,
he was never that body type. It just doesn't.
No, he wasn't. But given the comedic timing that Drax exhibits, like, not saying that Chadwick couldn't do it, because I think the man had the potential to do anything, really.
Yeah.
I agree with Desmond A. I can't see it. I just can't.
But like, it is a what if, like, it is like maybe one of the craziest what if scenarios of the MCU. Because what if he were cast as Drax, he would never be Black Panther. Like, it's
no. And then when you're talking about actual what if, I'm talking about the animated show called What If.
Yeah, good transition.
T'Challa was made to be Star-Lord.
I know. Also a Guardians thing, which I thought about that too. I'm like, I didn't know that.
You
Chadwick,
think they did that on purpose?
Maybe so. Maybe it's some kind of like nod.
Because he's voicing himself. Like, he's right. He's voicing himself. T'Challa.
And it is a weird, is like, all the characters for T'Challa to be, for him to be one of the Guardians, like, that just seems kind of off the wall. You know, like, I mean, I can see, like, T'Challa being Iron Man or Captain America, obviously, because he kind of has a close thing with Captain America, even in the comics and, of course, in the movie. But, like, for him to switch places with, like, Star-Lord. Yeah.
Yeah. If he had been like Falcon or something, you know, Sam Wilson.
Right. That makes sense.
Or hell, even like Bucky.
Yeah.
I could see that now.
Right.
You know, the given the era that all this takes place, it probably wouldn't have happened. But like, I can see that. I can't see him as that kind of angry, kind of dumb sort of physical being. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just, it doesn't seem to, that is wild to me.
I know, it's crazy.
That is crazy.
So
Chadwick, my man.
I know. So moving on in the Guardians, Gamora was of course Zoe Saldana, who, much like Chris Evans, was not that interested in playing Gamora because she had just played an alien in body paint in Avatar, and she was also in Star Trek, just like we mentioned
Chris Pine
earlier. So she, you know.
Also, Benedict Cumberbatch would be in Star Trek as well. He played Khan.
Yeah, there's, and I mean, Chris Hemsworth was in Star Trek also. He played Captain Kirk's dad in the first one. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he plays Chris Pine's dad in the, like, it's like in the past. He plays
that's
Chris
crazy.
Pine. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the first time I ever saw Chris Hemsworth. Like, that was first movie I ever saw him in. Huh. So,
weird.
I mean, spoiler, he's not in the movie for very long because
shocking.
Captain Kirk's dad doesn't survive too long, but, yeah, you should go check that out. Okay. The first Star Trek movie by J.J. Abrams is pretty good.
I like the second one. I like Into Darkness. That one was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So
moving
on. So again, Gamora, Zoe Saldana got the part.
Yeah.
However, another Black Panther actor auditioned for the role. Lupita Nyong'o auditioned to be Gamora. Again, they really liked her, but they didn't think she was right for Gamora. So she was later cast as Nakia in Black Panther. So I think that's kind of interesting how two of the main Black Panther stars auditioned for Guardians and then of course became like iconic characters in the Black Panther franchise. So,
but you know, I think Lupita, given her versatility, given her range, I think she would have actually done very well as Gamora. Yeah. I think that also would have been a very fitting character for her. Kind of harboring this sort of anger that she has towards her quote father, to me is very reminiscent of her character from 12 Years a Slave, which obviously is a very heavy topic of to discuss and what have you. But her performance in that movie was amazing. I think that's what led her to her Oscar win. So I think channeling that sort of energy into being Gamora, I think she would have done very well. Like Desmond A here, I think Lupita would have been a good Gamora. I agree. I think Zoe did fine. I think she did great as well.
Yeah.
I would actually be very interested to see Lupita as Gamora and have to play opposite who plays Nebula, to see just what kind of chemistry they would have had as, you know, on-screen sisters. So, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So Lupita, I like that choice. Yeah. I like that choice, though.
So Lupita Nyong'o auditioned, but she wasn't the only person to audition. Also auditioning was Amanda Seyfried. Do you know that actress?
I do know Amanda Seyfried, yes.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, you're fine. So very first time I saw her was in Mean Girls. She played Karen. She was the dumb one.
Yeah.
And I think she's more famously known for playing Cosette in Les Miserables with Hugh Jackman, Eddie Redmayne, Russell Crowe. Phenomenal actress. She wonderful singing voice. Don't see her as Gamora at all.
So she had a funny quote, and she actually got pretty far in the process in it. It actually seems like she didn't want the role, because it says she's passed on the role, saying, "I didn't want to be a part of the first Marvel movie that bombed. Who wants to see a movie about a talking tree and a raccoon?" Or she would
a lot of people
later definitely regret that. Yeah.
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 Damn. So, wow.
Yeah.
No idea about that. That's that's funny to me. Desmond A. She hit it. I think I have ESPN or something.
Right. From Mean Girls. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
We mentioned Kurt Russell earlier. And in Guardians Volume 2, Kurt Russell was cast as Ego, the living planet, who is the father of Star-Lord.
Yep.
However, the studio officially wanted Matthew McConaughey to play the character. And I remember I read this, and right away I go, no, because Matthew McConaughey isn't that much older than Chris Pratt. I looked it up. He's only 10 years older than Pratt. And to me, if you look at him, like, they look like they're like within 5 years of the same age. You know what I'm saying? Like, Matthew McConaughey keeps himself in pretty good shape. So does Chris Pratt. To me, they look like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it looks like they maybe went to high school together. Or you know what I'm saying? Like, or it was like an older brother, little brother situation, not a father son. So Matthew McConaughey passed in the role. He kind of said, hey, I like the first Guardians movie. I don't think I'm a fit for this universe. So,
you mean
all right. Yeah.
You mean he didn't say all right. Or like in The Wolf of Wall Street,
doing that. Instead, he said, I'm all right. I don't need the job. Yeah.
Now, if you had said they thought about Owen Wilson, he's all like, wow, you know.
Are you just going to do all your impressions right now?
We're not done with the pod, so it's very likely.
We might get some more.
We might get some more impressions here. Yeah. Desmond A in the chat says, yes, Justin, I agree. They look like they could be brothers. I wouldn't see the family resemblance, of course, but
like they look like they would like be
closer in sibling age than exactly. Father's. No, I get right, that. Right. I get that. Yeah, no.
So
no, you needed.
Yeah.
Clearly you needed someone to be older, to possess like the years experience, the wisdom, your freaking planet, for God's sakes. Like,
well, Kurt Russell, not is he much older than McConaughey, but like he is like a similar actor to Chris Pratt. They kind of have like similar, like they have a similar vibe. So it makes total sense that Kurt Russell would be Chris Pratt's father in the MCU. So once
they both
again,
they both have egos. I get it.
Yes. And one of them is named Ego. So anyway, the MCU, once again, very good at casting. They got the right casting.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so the next character is not a Guardian. It is Sharon Carter.
Okay.
So we of course know that Hayley Atwell, you know, auditioned, right?
But she was cast as Peggy.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I have the wrong actress. No, I'm sorry. Not Sharon. Sharon Carter was played by, I'm sorry, I don't have the right actress. Anyway, it was Emily Van Camp. So Emily Van Camp was Sharon Carter. However,
yes,
Karen Gillan auditioned to be Sharon Carter.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, and then she was later cast as Nebula in the Guardians.
Okay.
So that kind of goes with the Guardians theme. I messed that up there, but yeah, Emily Van Camp was Sharon Carter.
That's right. I think, I can see that. I could even see her potentially being Peggy Carter. But I think she's kind of got that look that would fit that, you know, 1940s sort of era.
Yeah.
But to be Sharon Carter as the niece of Peggy Carter, that would have been cool. That would be cool. But I, you know, she excels as Nebula. I think that was really cool.
Yeah. They made the right call there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the character Maya Hansen from Iron Man 3?
Maya Hansen. Yeah. The biologist.
So originally Jessica Chastain was the pick to play that part. She, however, declined, and Rebecca Hall was cast as the character.
So, okay. Not a huge role, but okay. No, interesting. Yeah.
Actually, it's supposed to be a much bigger role, but there's a lot of information in the book about that. Mm-hmm. So definitely check that out.
I guess given who Jessica Chastain is, that would warrant having a bigger role than what.
Well, even with Rebecca Hall, it's supposed to be a bigger character, but there are reasons why she was kind of de-emphasized. And it has really nothing to do with Rebecca Hall, but it has to do with kind of how Marvel, the company, not studios, was founded on their principles. And so. Anyway, I don't want to spoil stuff like that. So yeah, just go read that. Check that out.
Yikes.
But moving on to Ant-Man/Scott Lang. Of course, Paul Rudd was the pick.
Mm-hmm.
However, by the way, Ant-Man was supposed to be one of the three first movies of the MCU. Of course, Iron Man, Hulk, and Ant-Man was supposed to be the third movie. It didn't happen. It was going to be directed by Edgar Wright. However, he later would drop out due to creative differences with Marvel Studios. However, whenever he was in charge of the movie, he wanted to cast Simon Pegg as Scott Lang.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Who Simon Pegg is a favorite of Edgar Wright. He's been in Edgar Wright movies, and so that's who he wanted to cast.
Simon Pegg, the Scottish actor.
Yep.
The one who was in Star Trek.
Yep.
Jeez.
Yes, man. The one who in The Boys, that's who Huey Campbell is based on.
Huey Campbell's father. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was father in the show, and the character Huey in the comic was based off Simon Pegg.
That's so right, it was.
He wanted to cast Simon Pegg. Also considered for the role, Armie Hammer.
Oh boy.
Yeah. He would.
Oh.
They dodged a bullet with that guy.
Dodged a bullet with that one. My goodness. Yeah.
However, the strongest contender to Paul Rudd was Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I can kind of see that.
Yeah. Who would, of course,
I can kind of see that.
He was in The Dark Knight Rises as he played
Robin.
Robin, yeah. So
or Dick Clark was it?
Name? Not Dick Clark. Dick. No.
Dick Clark. What did I say?
No, it wasn't like rocking around the Christmas tree. Dick Clark. No. I honestly can't think of the name of the character, but it was supposed to be Robin.
Grayson. Dick Grayson.
No. Dick Grayson is actually Robin.
I know, but wasn't that his character name?
No, it's a different character. Yeah.
Oh, fine.
I'll do it.
Continue.
I can't believe I don't remember the name of the character, but
if I'm right, it's not
Dick Grayson.
Money.
It's 100% not Dick Grayson. I will. Yeah.
Oh, John Blake.
Yeah. There
what,
you go. John
what a Blake. Basic name.
Yeah. Well, that's why it was
so basic.
Set that way. That way, whenever he becomes Robin, because Robin is his actual real given name that they reveal.
Right.
That's like the big twist that, he's going to now take up the mantle as Batman because Christian Bale's Batman has retired with Selina Kyle played by
Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
Yep.
And speaking of Anne Hathaway, we may talk about her very soon. So moving on.
Pepper Potts.
No, she wasn't. Yeah. No. So moving on to the villain for Ant-Man, the first movie. It was Yellow Jacket / Darren Cross. Corey Stoll got the role. However, originally cast was Patrick Wilson. He had to pass due to scheduling conflicts. Now, if you're
he was an Aquaman, though.
Yeah.
He was in Phantom of the Opera. He was kind of an unknown at that time. Yeah.
Yeah, Patrick Wilson. So he had other things going on. So and speaking of Aquaman, he's in Aquaman too. He plays Aquaman's brother Orm, mm-hmm. Ocean Master. So yeah. So that would have been interesting if he were the MCU instead of the DCEU.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So now going back in time, Sam Raimi, of course, directed the original Spider-Man trilogy for Sony.
Yep.
And he was set to make a Spider-Man 4, which of course did not happen, which later became The Amazing Spider-Man with Andrew Garfield. However, whenever he was working on Spider-Man 4, here's some of the castings that we were told in the book. So okay. Felicia Hardy / Black Cat was going to be portrayed by Anne Hathaway, which, as Anne Hathaway says in the book, if she would have played Black Cat, I doubt she would have gotten to play Catwoman, you know, a few years later. So probably a good move for her that she didn't become Black Cat.
She became a cat in some sort of fashion.
Yes, like, exactly. You know. Right. Also dressed in black. So she got to, she got to do that. The Vulture, which of course in the MCU played by Michael Keaton, in the Sam Raimi universe was going to be played by John Malkovich. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
John Malkovich.
Yeah. He was going to be, the Vulture. And then get this. the real villain of the film was going to be a character called the Vultress, which is the Vulture's daughter, played by Angelina Jolie.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
Yeah. So
I'm kind of glad this movie didn't happen.
That movie did not happen, I think. Yeah.
Thank God.
John
Malkovich, Angelina Jolie. Yeah. And who's the third person you said?
It was Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway.
As Black Cat. So I know you're not a big Spider-Man fan, but Black Cat is a big character in the Spider-Man.
This just sounds silly.
She much like how Catwoman is a frenemy of Batman, where like she's a love interest of Batman, but she's also a villain. Mm. Black Cat kind of wears the same hat for Spider-Man. So,
got it.
Yeah.
So this just sounds like a silly movie.
So moving on to the Spider-Man in the MCU, of course, casting that role was very crucial because after Tobey Maguire in the Raimi movies, of course, Andrew Garfield played the character and Garfield did not get to continue. The Spider-Man chapter is awesome also in this book, so definitely check that out. But as we know, Tom Holland was cast as the famous web slinger. His main competition, and there were a lot of actors, they didn't. In the book, they only mentioned one other actor, but I did my own research and there's a ton of other actors. It would take forever to go through all of them. But the main actor who is Tom Holland's competition is an actor I'm not familiar with, but his name is Asa Butterfield. He was in the movie called Ender's Game.
Yes, I love Asa.
Yeah, so Asa was the number two for Peter Parker. He lost out to Tom Holland. And what happened
he's got that baby face. He could have been young forever.
So both Asa Butterfield and Tom Holland did screen tests with Robert Downey Jr.
Okay.
And RDJ endorsed Tom Holland. In fact, they said after auditioning with Holland, he walked over to Feige and gave a big thumbs up. And so RDJ kind of cast Tom Holland.
He kind of started Tom Holland's career. Yeah.
So Tom Holland is very deferential to RDJ for a number of reasons, but because of that. Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was, again, the Spider-Man chapter is bonkers. You got to check that out. Very cool.
Asa is a great, great, great actor. The first time I saw him, he was a young boy, and it was a movie called The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. And this is Nazi time. His father is a Nazi officer, and they live next to a concentration camp, and he befriends a little boy in striped pajamas. And that movie, oh man, it still makes me cry every time I watch it. For him to exhibit that kind of performance at such a young age, and then when I saw him again in Ender's Game, he had that level of intensity. So I think he could have, I can see how he could have been a contender for Spider-Man. And the fact that he has that baby face, like even now, he's, you know, like 20, I don't know, 25 or so. I think he's about Tom Holland's age.
They're
both English, which I think is hilarious. They both can do a great American accent. That is really interesting that it was down to those two. And for RDJ to basically give his blessing to Tom Holland is incredible. Because, you know, for someone who's not a huge Spider-Man fan, I absolutely love Tom Holland as Spider-Man. I think he's like the perfect fit for a very young Spider-Man. You know, you look back at, you know, the Sam Raimi with Tobey Maguire, and it's like, oh my God, you know, he looks so old to play a teenager. And then you look at Tom Holland, it's like, oh, this makes more sense, you know?
I mean,
bravo. Bravo. Like
all three actors that we've seen on screen play Spider-Man, I've liked them in their own ways. But like, Tobey Maguire seemed too old. Andrew Garfield looked too cool to be like the nerdy character. But Tom Holland kind of like just kind of nails it.
Both worlds.
He's
nerdy, but he's cute, you know?
He's the best Peter Parker, and he's also the best Spider-Man, which I think is like, you know, so that made him the perfect cast.
Well, and the fact that he also does like a lot of his own sort of stunt work, and
he's very kind acrobatic of, and
he kind of manifested getting that role. So that's pretty cool.
Again, there's a lot of great Spider-Man stuff in the book. They break down some of these contracts with Marvel over Spider-Man and how he came to the MCU. That's a great part of the book. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming, when he did join the MCU, the title was a sly nod to the fact that the character was returning to Marvel. So I thought that was a cool entrance in the book. So that wraps up all the casting stuff. I wanted to mention a couple other little interesting nuggets. Again, I don't want to spoil the whole book, but a couple interesting things. For example, Joss Whedon directed the first Avengers movie. He directed actually the first two. And he wanted to call the first Avengers, which is Marvel's Avengers, he wanted to call it Avengers: Some Assembly Required. Which is,
it doesn't sound like it's a Lego set.
It's funny, but like, I don't think like
it's too wordy.
No. Also, it's like, it's too silly to like,
yeah, it is.
Like you're trying to be too cute, you know, like, I think people would have been like, what the hell? Like,
if it was simply Avengers Assembled.
Right.
More appropriate, but Some Assembly Required. Like,
I mean, it's a cute, funny title, but yeah.
No, maybe if it was like a cartoon or something, but no, right. not for the first, like, team up movie.
The Thanos post credit scene in the Avengers movie, he threw that in as like a fan service to like comic book fans. Like they were not planning to do Thanos anytime soon,
the one with the gauntlet.
He put Thanos in there, and all of a sudden it's like, this is good, this is our direction, this is the way we're gonna go. So that's one thing about the book, is you realize they didn't have
Infinity Saga.
Right. They didn't have like this like grand overreaching plan. They just like, they saw what worked, and they made moves on the fly, and then they made their plans. And so it's kind of, you know, I think we all thought it was like all mapped out from the beginning, and some stuff is mapped out, but not everything was. And like I said, we're at a point with this new Avengers movie with the Kang stuff. Who knows what's going to happen now? So
yeah,
I think it's interesting. We talked about this on this day.
Yeah, for sure. And I know this is something, you know, we didn't cover at throughout this podcast, but I know you shared with me while reading this book about Kevin Feige, how he had an internship during the Sony time with X-Men, and how, you know, he had questions, or he was like, no, it should be more like the comics. And he was, you know, making all these efforts to make sure that they were making this movie as authentic to the comics as much as possible. And, you know, he kind of got in trouble for stuff like that, because one, you're an intern. Two, you were given a directive to not bring comic books and to talk to the actors about any of this. And he did. And so to me, that really shows like his drive and his dedication to wanting to make sure that the quality of the movie or movies that he's a part of really matters, right? They have to make adjustments, because obviously you can't, you know, be true to every single page in a comic or character, that kind of thing. You have to kind of pivot to make it work. But for the most part, I really feel that Kevin Feige and company have made things work. Like, yes, some things may not have been as successful as other movies or shows, but like for the most part, it's just, it's, it's been quite the reign. And I think the fact that the book is entitled as such is very well placed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kevin Feige obviously is a huge character throughout the book. And Desmond A said she's added it to her Amazon cart. So
you made her into a believer.
No, it's really good. I don't think you'll regret that. That's a good call. But Kevin Feige, who is like now, I mean, he runs the most successful studio in the history of movies.
Yeah.
When he was a college student, he applied for the USC film school. He was rejected 5 times. It took 6 attempts. Like, now, I mean, they should name a wing at the whole school after, like a whole building after him. You know, like he ended up going to USC. He was a major film fan. He was not a comic fan.
Yeah.
He became a comic fan later on in life whenever he was working on these X-Men movies. And he's like, hey, we need to like look
make
at
sure
like,
it's legit.
Yeah, this, you know, these characters have a deep history and like this stuff has been fleshed out before. So, it's, you know, the book's not all about him, but he's obviously a big player, as of course you think he would be. So, and my final thing about the book, I just want to mention, this is just like a little funny quote in the book. So there's talk about how in the comic books, the MCU is Earth 199999, right? However, the MCU refers to itself as Earth 616 because the Marvel universe in the comics is 616. So Iman Vellani, who is Miss Marvel and a huge fan, she, like Kevin Feige thinks that the MCU should be 616. However, it shouldn't be. And she's always telling him, like she every time she meets him, they talk about this. Okay. And she says that one time she was at one of the red carpets, and she saw Kevin Feige from across the way, and he looked at her and he silently whispered 616. And she says, I think about that every night before I go to bed. It's just really funny. It's so like
funny.
She's such a great like character and a great like ambassador for the MCU.
She's such a good addition to the whole franchise. Yeah.
She's like, it haunts my nightmares and every night before I go to bed. So anyway, funny stuff, but
therapy, 616.
Yeah.
616.
Once again, this is a great book. I would recommend anybody to pick it up. So, Brittany, do you have any other thoughts about what we talked about there?
This has been fun. I mean, you share with me some of my favorite actors of all time to have either been considered or have actually auditioned. Throwing in other people that I'm like, no, absolutely the F not.
Yeah.
This is really interesting. Like Desmond A, I might actually just go and get this book and read it for myself or get like the audio version. I wonder if it's available on my Spotify. This is not sponsored or anything like that. This is just a quick plug-in for y'all. If you have Spotify Premium, you guys have access to a lot of audiobooks included in your premium account, y'all. So take advantage of that, because unlike other services, you have to pay a monthly, you know, thing that's separate from whatever else you're already paying for. This is all inclusive, so you can get your music, you can get your podcasts, hours, and audiobooks, you know, just for your premium costs. That to me is amazing, and you can just keep adding your playlist. So if this book is available on the Spotify audiobooks playlist, I am absolutely going to give it a listen.
Yeah, great stuff. Before we get out of here, there's some more Marvel news before we leave. Last week, Marvel announced their kind of slate for 2024. And, obviously we know the only movie coming out next year is Deadpool 3.
Yep.
However, they announced the shows that are going to be released next year. So next year we're going to get Echo, of course, which is dropping January 9th. It was going to be January 10th. They moved it up a day. All 5 episodes are going to drop on January 9th. Mm-hmm. So that will be a binge release of that.
Yeah.
Then we're also going to get Agatha. The Agatha show is now called Agatha Darkhold Diaries. It was formerly called Agatha Coven of Chaos.
How many times has that show changed names?
I know. It's changed.
It's just been like 3 or 4.
Yeah. So that's the new name, is Agatha Darkhold Diaries. We're getting that next year.
Okay.
Also, we're getting some animated stuff, including X-Men 97. We're getting a Black Panther series called Eyes of Wakanda. It's an animated series. And the Spider-Man freshman year is now, they changed the title. It's now called Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. So all that stuff is coming in 2024. So,
okay.
We will be likely reviewing those all shows and movies all whenever they come out. So, and of course, the next thing for the MCU or, you know, for Marvel is What If, which will drop on December 22nd. There'll be one episode a day for 9 days. We will do a review sometime in early January of all 9 episodes in one podcast. So look for that in the new year. So, so Brittany, I think that's all we got. As we get out of here, we just want to thank the people in the chat. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So Desmond A and Yesenia, thank you so much, both of y'all, for being here and sharing your thoughts on the things that Justin shared with all of us. Love your input. We love interacting with you guys. The engagement's just always so much more fun when we've got people in the chat. So we definitely encourage everyone who's watching live and or watching the replay to join us for our live streams, because they're just a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun when we've got y'all hanging out with us and sharing some info with us as well. So we appreciate you both being here. Yesenia is a longtime Watchers fan, as well as Desmond A. Desmond A has also been on the pod with us a couple of times, currently competing with us for our character draft. So if you missed it at the top of the show, check our description box down below for the link to the draft podcast, as well as the link to cast your vote as to which one of us here in the Watchers in the Basement has the best character draft picks. So we'll announce the winner come January 2024. But also, Justin, before we head out of here, I want to tell everyone to not only subscribe to our YouTube channel, also hit that like button. Helps out our channel a lot. And we're on the road to 300 subscribers by the end of 2023, y'all. At time of recording, we're at 291. 9 more. Did I do that right? 9 more. We need 9 more.
Help us out. Yeah.
Sub. So help us out. Tell your friends, tell your coworkers, tell your parents, tell your dog, you know, just, you know, help us get to 300 subscribers before the end of 2023. That would be our Christmas wish and our New Year's resolution, even though we didn't make one. But anyway, also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Watchers Basement, where you can also use the hashtag Watchers Basement to not only help grow our audience, but to tag us in things you want us to talk about, memes, articles. We talked about breaking news about Jonathan Majors. If you guys see anything else that may be of some interest to us, be sure to use that hashtag Watchers Basement. Once again, follow us all on social media. And if you're not into the video podcasts here on YouTube, we've got you covered with audio podcasts available to you on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Be sure to follow us there and give us a 5-star rating.
Thank you, Brittany. Appreciate it. So for Brittany, I'm Justin saying thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. And if we don't see you before the holidays, happy holidays, Merry Christmas and all that good stuff, and Happy New Year. And so again, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye.